Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 433. My name is John Morgan, and Cole Coffee is with me here in Sin City, but not in the same place, but in Sin City. We are here together in Las Vegas, in the home of the National Hockey League champion Vegas Golden Knights, in the home of the Vegas Sphere, and the home of the MMA Roadshow. But we're not together because, I'm just going to throw it out there. We'll just get this all out on the table. Your boy got sick. Your boy got sick is what happened. I came down with a little bit of maybe some food poisoning overnight. It was either I did make a late night run to B-dubs with the family, or
The facts are coming out.
Hold on. It was not a frosty beverage-laden run to B-dubs. It was more just like there was not a lot of stuff open last night. By the time we were ready for some late night dinner, we were kind of trotting around town a little bit. So there was that, and that could have very well been it. Although also for lunch yesterday, I kind of had like the sketch leftovers. You know how there's something in there and like you're like, it's probably fine. It's probably good. Fridge is down to temp. We're all good to go. And I heated up one of those kind of sketchy leftovers, and I think this might have been a very self-imposed illness that I had to deal with.
Oh, so you don't partake in your old restaurant tactic? You're not labeling out your leftovers in the fridge. You're not sharpieing them. Must eat by this, or this is the date. And you're not tossing out. You're not rotating your stuff.
I do rotate. I will say the food service background in me never dies. Like my wife does not necessarily have that same level of detail to the fridge arrangement. And I'm like trying to, making sure everything's in contact. I'm not putting day dots on anything. I'm not going that far. We're not putting like the day dots on there, but they are like, I do have everything in containers and I have them rotate and I put the old on top of, old on top of the new and all that stuff. So, it's, somehow though, it's still one of those ones.
What was it? What do you think it was? What was the, leftovers?
It was some chicken. And here's the thing is I don't like to cook my chicken ultra well done because then it dries out. And so it was in there
especially if if you're not going to finish it and you might have to reheat it. Yeah. You want to give a little bit of leeway.
A little under that 165. I think maybe I went a little too far under that 165 and let it just chill up in there in the refrigerator for a little too long. And normally my wife is the one that comes around and goes like, you're going to throw that away, right? And I probably should have, but I didn't. So anyway, I was a late scratch to media day today. So I appreciate you picking up the slack and, handling business. I did watch all of your coverage over there. I watched the live stream and we'll talk about all that in just a second. We'll get into it. I do want to say, that as we're doing this in remote locations and we're doing this via the magic of the internet, it does make me really, really, really wish we were doing video at this point in time because you are looking at your Scott
like
Coker finest, bro. You are like a different person. I feel like I'm about to ask
you. I tell you, if I was running that company, I would have Ngannou would be on the roster, dog. I would have made the numbers work. I'd make the numbers work.
I'm telling you, I'm about to get into details about the sale with you and about how the operations are going to work moving forward. But yes, Cole Coffee went and got a haircut. He teased the fact that this may get done, and it did. But you went clean shaven, and I'll be honest with you, I didn't even realize how long it had been since you had gone clean shaven. You said 10 years?
It's been longer than that. It's probably, I know I was clean shaven. It's funny because I happened to see Tim O'Toole and Craig Borsari in the lobby today, and those are VPs or ones that are like super executive VP. I'm not sure what Borsari's title is. He's Tim O'Toole's boss. But Tim O'Toole was a production VP, and he was one of the guys that I interviewed with when I came out to the UFC, and I was clean shaven then. And that was ever since then I started growing some sort of facial hair or something. Because I remember I saw some pictures early on when I was first sending pictures back to my Buckeye friends of me wearing a Buckeye shirt in my office. And I was pointing it out. I was literally clean shaven. But yeah, it's probably been anywhere roughly between 10 to 12 years since I've had this.
That's crazy, man.
Clean face on or whatever. And part of it was it was just getting hot, but I also just wanted to just check in and just see what my face looked like. It's one thing when you see your face obviously every day, but when you have a beard on it, you just kind of forget. And part of it too was when I started losing weight and I was working out, I was it's nice when you can't see your second chin, you know, and you're like, things are covered up. But I kind of want to just check in and just see, you know, and just see what the face looked like and just try something different. You know, not to say that's going to stay like this forever, but, you know, honestly, it was just something to do and just something to try. But
literally,
yeah,
looked like a different just check in.
Literally looked like a different. And it's funny because I hear people from high school like, oh, you look like the old high school Kenny. I was like, dude, I think I was like 165, 180 when I left high school. I was like, I looked like I ate my high school version. But it was just kind of fun. It was fun to see that, you know. But I definitely shaved off some years when I shaved off the beard.
That's it.
You know, I don't have the grays, you know, kind of thrown out there as much. But I'm telling you, I'm not missing the heavy facial hair in this heat because it's brutal. When we just left the media day, there was like a massive heat wave, like that rush of heat as soon as you walk outside, and it was brutal. And but I could feel it on this nice shaved face.
I'm telling you, bro.
A lot more so than the other one. But with I look very different.
You look. I'm telling you, with the clean shave and then you put on that Renat Fakhretdinov hat, bro, and hit the dating sites, bro.
Let me grab it.
Oh, we're definitely going to video moving forward. We're figuring this out. We're definitely moving to video moving forward. It's Scott Coker with Renat Fakhretdinov's hat on top of the Bellator president. This is amazing. Oh, this is the worst audio ever. But this right here is convincing me that we have to go video.
Have to go video wise.
Oh man, just
it's
like
fun
that.
To like, yeah, yeah. Look at that. I'll have to put a new picture on the dating app. But I always hate putting this thing on because, you know, normally, especially right now, it's so fucking hot. I don't want to, like, sweat and, like, ruin it. Like, it was such a surprise when he gave me this. And I was so honored. And I was like, dude, thank you so much. I mean, he pulled it right off his head. And then I didn't even think about how on fight night when he saw me, he's like, yo, where's the hat? I'm like, bro, I cherish that thing. I'm like, I don't want to fucking wear it and make it, like, dirty or nasty or drop it or, heaven forbid, take it off and, like, forget it somewhere.
But you bring it to the next
time. And then when I explained
that,
he understood it.
But you're going to have to wear it next time.
Maybe. But then I feel like I'm treading the line of, like, you know,
unprofessionalism.
Like I'm unprofessional rooting for a guy like on a fight night. So I don't want to cross that line, but I think he understands and stuff. He saw the picture. So, but yeah, I don't want to ruin it, but yeah, it's funny, but yeah, it sits here in the office, but yeah. How dare you, Scott Coker, put on a UFC fighter's gear, you know, but it's ridiculous. People used to always joke about that. And I'm sure we told this story because we've been doing this for so darn long. There was a time when we were covering a Bellator event and I was on press row. And a guy tapped me on the back of my shoulder and was like, Mr. Coker, I have a question for you. And I was like, I turn around. I'm wearing shorts. I'm sure I was wearing shorts and maybe like a polo or something. But I was like, are you for real? And I can't remember if he immediately recognized that I wasn't him or if I was just like, oh, sorry, I'm not Scott. And then he recognized or something. But yeah, I've legit been tapped on a shoulder at a Bellator event. Somebody thought I was Scott Coker.
Well,
so.
I mean, listen.
I remember one time we took a picture together just so I could prove to people that we were different individuals.
That's hilarious. It's funny because, I mean, I see you every week for the last, you know, 9 years or 10 years or however many years it's been. I see you every single week. And then obviously deal with Scott Coker a lot over the years. So to me, I'm like, how could anybody make that mistake? But if you like don't know the people personally and you're around them, like – I can definitely see the comparisons. I can definitely see it.
Yeah, his wallet's a little bit fat. Well, not a little. His wallet's a lot fatter than my wallet. I would gladly trade wallets with that gentleman any day.
Scott Coker has done all right for himself over the years in the mixed martial arts game. All right, well, listen, we got a lot to talk about. First of all, I just want to say what a weird week it's been for me, if I'm just being honest. I'm just out here just doing my liberal race baiting thing. You know what I mean? It's the things that I do as a race baiting liberal
reporter.
You're so
woke, bro. You're so woke.
It is so weird to me, man, and I don't want to trudge through this situation too much. Obviously, it comes down to what was said, the conversation between myself and Dana White at the post-fight press conference the other night. But it has been eye-opening to me to see how many people go out of their way to tag me on somebody else's clip of the video just to talk trash about me. I'm like, what is wrong in people's lives that you need to tag me into a social media post that's not my social media post just to insult me? I don't understand. I just literally do not understand that frame of thinking. And, it was actually kind of funny. It was Hot Tea one time, Oscar Willis, who said, I think sometimes people forget that the people that they see out there are real people. Like, I am just a real person, you know what I mean? And like, that stuff, while I think a lot of it is trash, like, I mean, I don't like having an alert on my phone and pick up the phone and it's, oh, what is this? And it's, oh, it's somebody talking shit about me. Oh, that's nice. What a great way to get through my day, you know what I mean? But I try not to take it too serious, but it's just been bizarre to me. But it's also so weird about how people just make assumptions. Like, the whole thing is weird about you're a liberal Republican. I've never talked about I don't even know that I have political opinions. Like, I don't even know what I would qualify myself as politically. So to be like, oh, look at this liberal guy over here, da da da. I'm like, what? You know one question about me, and now all of a sudden, it's been a bizarre thing to me to see, I guess, just a slice of how things get on the political side of things and how people get into that kind of stuff when you're not just talking about fights and just talking about MMA. Yeah. It's been weird.
It's ridiculous. I mean, and it's funny because, you know me, I don't really live in the Twitter sphere. I very rarely even pull it up, you know, so I kind of almost forgot about that thing because it's like I remember it happened and then there was some backlash and people were talking shit and then I just kind of assumed it was done. So, you know, silly me to think that people can't just, you know, leave it alone, but it doesn't help when people dig things up and then put it back out there. But yeah, I mean, for some of that, it's just people are just angry and just want to argue about something, you know, at any particular point. I mean, there was nothing wrong with the question. I mean, if people feel that it's woke or it's wrong to ask, you know, when somebody's up there literally going to push something and obviously it's going to cause anger in multiple parties, whether on one side or the other, and you know that you're using the actual race of the people as the subject of why you're talking. If you find that that's, you know, okay and that's fine and you figure that, you know, that's fine. That's the world you want to live in. But, you know, understand that most people in polite society don't like to bring up shit that is going to be anger, you know, going to anger somebody. And if they do, you know, they want to question how your brand or your organization is going to respond to that sort of stuff. Yeah. I mean, you know, if you want, I mean, yes, it's one thing that, yes, you have people that fight for a living. Okay, does that mean they still can't be polite members of society? You know, is it just because they happen to fight that you expect them to only be shitheads 24/7?
Well, and to be honest, that was a big part of the question I asked. And here's one thing I think is important for people to realize. Just because somebody asks a question as a reporter does not mean that they not necessarily have an opinion either way on how it should go. I just saw it as kind of an important topic. And here's I'll say this point first, and then we'll go further on. But my question really was just that, hey, and if it didn't get conveyed correctly or I worded it correctly, you know, that's on me. But the question really was, hey, listen, you saw what happened in there, and I know you say that, hey, people say bad things, but this thing has some real racial undertones to it. And I'm sorry, I know there's a lot of people that say it doesn't. It does. I'm just going to have to disagree with you on that. Is there a concern? Like, is this a situation where you, Dana White, might want to step in and be like, hey, guys, I never tell anybody what to say. That's not what we do here. But can we back off this just a little bit? And not even necessarily just for, like, as you said, to make sure that they're proper representatives of society or they're representing the brand well. But I just think about things like safety in arenas and things like that. You know, you think about, remember those scenes of, like, you know, the Dagestanis and the Irish going at it in T-Mobile Arena, you know, in the Habib and Conor fight. And that's kind of what I'm thinking is, like, man, if you've got these, you know, this group of people who feel one way strongly enough and this group of people that feel one way strongly enough, and it's not just, hey, that's my guy and I'm supporting my guy and rah-rah, we're cheering for our dude, but if it, like, gets to this level of hate where there's this darkness and tension in the building, is that something you might want to step in? Now, if the answer
is – and that could pop off at anywhere. It's not even just – you know, I don't know if Dana's just like, well, I don't have to worry about that unless this fight ever goes to Africa. I mean, when it comes to that sort of thing, that could pop off anywhere. That could happen in MSG. That can happen anywhere, you know, where you have a subject that is such a firecracker subject that people are completely either enraged one way or the other. All it takes is just one moment to pop off, and then, you know, then what are you going to do? I mean, like you said, I remember being in Brazil, you know, we talk about the Colby days, and I feel like there were other events. I remember being backstage and having to completely route a different way because the crowd was so upset about how some of the fights went with just their fighters. And it wasn't even like anything enraging. It was just, they were just so about their people. And, you know, they hated the fact that they lost to, like, an American or something that wasn't them, that somebody that was different, that they were causing and breaking into barricades and stuff behind the stage, underneath the arena, all this other stuff. So we had to reroute the way that we were trying to even leave the building.
You mentioned Colby.
And that's not even – yeah.
I mean, like, you mentioned Colby. They didn't even have him do medicals, right? They just rushed him straight out there. They didn't even have him do medicals. It was so bad. I mean, they were like, legit, just get him out of here.
Yeah, I mean, it's a legit problem that, you know, you can't just turn a blind eye and just say, oh, you know, I can't believe you're asking that, you know, because then when something bad happens and you say, well, wow, man, why didn't we see this coming? Oh, well, because from the top down, they're trying to push it off and say it's not a problem. It's not something we need to worry about. You know, this sport, these people fight for a living. We don't need to worry about that shit. You know, that's, you know, talking from a guy that has a private room in the back of the thing that's between barricade after barricade after barricade that doesn't have to worry about it. But for the general populace that's in this arena, shit could get very dangerous really, really quickly. And it just, you know, it's... It's a little weird that he doesn't have any sort of sensitivities to the people that might be attending some of these events where some of this shit might pop off. It's one thing if it happens on Twitter and nobody's getting hurt. Yeah, you want to get butt hurt because somebody says something that upsets you on, you know, Twitter. That's cool. And you can go at them and they can say shit. Like, you might not like the shit that somebody's saying on Twitter, and I agree with that. But it's different when something like that happens when you're actually in a room with somebody. And that's, I think, the problem that's happened with some of this stuff is that if the organization is saying, guys, it's just a free-for-all, I can't control these people, they're going to say what they want to say, and then just, you know, put a blind eye to the fact of what that's opening up, the hatred and the anger. And I think that, you know, that kind of plays back to the way that sort of our world, our own country has become very divided in the sense, and it's very angry, you know. And I think if there was ever a point where, you know, a lot of people start saying, oh man, civil war might pop off again. And as silly, as ridiculous it sounds, I feel like we're closer to that than ever before, you know, ever since it actually happened. And if this is the mindset that, if you say something, you know, if these topics that, you know, it's not about being woke. It's just, you know, in my eyes, it's just common sense. Like, if you, you know, if you know that you're going to say something, especially along these certain lines, whether you're talking about, you know, obviously you say something about somebody's family, you're going to get upset. You know, you're going to, you possibly can get upset. But if you're talking about somebody and then you're bringing in the whole race, their whole generations of people, you know, whole ethnicity, you know, all this other sort of stuff, and understanding that by some of the things that you're saying are cool or fine or whatever, you're in a sense starting a fight, picking a fight with, you know, an unlimited amount of people. And then to think that, you know, oh, it's, you know, just stop worrying about this shit. You know, like, buck it up, whatever. You know, that's the idiotic thing. And that's what drives me crazy about America. A lot of times when America gets pissed off about a lot of shit, they're like, oh, well, fuck that dude over there. You know, like, I'm going to do what I want to do here. It's a very American-centric thing. They don't think about anything elsewhere. But then go fucking travel somewhere. Most of these people never fucking travel anywhere. They never go anywhere outside the U.S. And then they don't understand when they do travel why people think the stereotype that Americans are assholes and we get treated like shit when we travel elsewhere. It's because they look at us and they think we're all just a bunch of fucking hicks that love our guns. I do love my guns, you know, but they just think that, you know, like, we fucking hate everybody else. And then if anybody disagrees with us, that, you know, they just like, well, you know, they seem to hate all of us. So maybe we should just hate on them. And it's just, I don't know why it feels like, you know, that people want to make you feel bad about saying something along the lines of like, or just even bringing up the fact that, you know, this is going to start something. Oh, well, just forget it, man. And, you know, don't worry about it. You're just being soft for worrying about it. I'm like, I'm smart enough to understand. And like what you said, you brought to light, like, this is a powder keg waiting to happen. And it can get very, very bad and get very bad on fight weekend or whatever. And it's one thing if you love this shit because you know you can make a fight promo. Are you going to make a fight promo when a fucking riot breaks out in an event because that you allow people to talk crazy shit? And, you know, next thing you know, you got, you know, every African-American, every black guy in the arena fucking jumping white people in the arena. And you're going to be like, oh, it's just fighting, guys. You know, I'm like, if you're going to allow, you know, a fucking powder keg to start, you know, and that's not just saying like what Izzy said. I mean, I think they could probably fucking sit Drickus down. I'm like, Drickus, yo, let's talk about some things real quick.
I was going to say,
it's definitely not all one side. It's not one way or whatever, but they need to educate the fighters to a point where I get it. They fight for a living and they do whatever, but it doesn't mean that you have to be completely clueless or just think that everything you say has no sort of ramification, because everywhere else, if you don't have your own business and you're not working for yourself, you're held to a standard for that company, and that company can get the fuck rid of you anytime. Now, if I said some of the shit that like Izzy was saying, or even some of the stupid shit that Drickus was saying, USA Today could say, sorry, you're gone, and there's nothing I could do for it because I don't have my own company. I have to sort of toe the line. Here they are working for a company that's like, oh, well, that's cool, whatever. I can't stop the guys. They fight for a living. Well, it's like, yes, you can.
I guess they're independent contractors, so maybe they fall under different guidelines.
They could still stop hiring them.
You're absolutely right. And here's the thing is that – and that's I think, a big misconception about this whole thing is people thought from my line of questioning that I was just questioning Israel Adesanya and his use of the N-word in there when that isn't the case. Because if you're a longtime listener to this show, you'll know – the very first, because even people that have been telling the backstory of how this thing all played out aren't going back far enough. In Driggs's first UFC fight on Fight Island, afterwards he said, "I'm going to be the first real African champion that breathes African air and walks in African soil." He said that after his very first fight. I believe it was Marcus Perez was the opponent. And at the time on Fight Island on this show, we said, bro, I don't think you should say that. Like, that's not a good thing to say.
Like it's idiotic.
And again, I don't think, and for the record, I do, and I like Driggs Duplessis. In fact, we ended up drinking beers on the beach one day in Abu Dhabi one day and got to actually talk to him and get to know him a little bit. And I don't think he meant this in a racist way in any way whatsoever. However, there are certain situations where even though your intended meaning was not to put something in there, it's just implied, unfortunately, because of the complicated history of the continent, of the nation of South Africa. You know, it's just there. So it's like whether you intended it to be there or not, it's there under the surface. And I just think you have to be respectful of it. And I just don't think he ever did. So I don't think Driggs meant for this to go where it went. But the problem, and again, and I think this goes back to what I was asking about the other night. I know you don't tell anybody what to say. But again, he said it in his first UFC fight. Maybe somebody should have gotten in his ear at that point and been like, hey, we're not going to really tell you what to say. But, you know, think about what you're saying when you say real African champion, when we do have three black African champions, and people might take this the wrong way. And I'm not saying they're right in misinterpreting Driggs or inferring anything. But it's understandable that they would.
Yeah. You know? So I mean, like, I'm not. I think it's wrong for anybody to just tell him. I mean, he is South African. I think it's wrong for people to tell him that he's not African. But for him to be so blindly against like these other guys, I'm having a hard time getting the words together because I literally, it's like, you want to sit him down and be like, bro, do you understand? I mean, but you understand the history of your country, you know, where it came from, how it became to be,
right,
and the people, the oppression and the things. And like, it's never been it's not like they just ever politely just said, hey guys, oh, by the way, we were kind of dicks back then. You know, I mean, like, there's still this level of indifference to the people that have less and, were oppressed. And it's like, you kind of wish that somebody would be like, okay, when you say these sort of things, there's going to be some misunderstanding. Can you maybe at least phrase in your thing and say, I understand how some people might think this is wrong or blah, 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 but this is my belief because I was raised in Africa and this is me. This is whatever, you know?
Well, put it like this. Think about this. When Brandon Moreno won the title, right? What do they say? This is the first Mexican-born champion. Nobody ever said this is the first real Mexican champion, right? Because Cain Velasquez and his family moved across the border in search of a better life, right? And he's a Mexican-American. And, of course, the Mexican people rallied around him, but he was Mexican-American. He was born and raised in the United States, right? But when Brandon Moreno won the title, yes, people made the distinction that, look, this is the first Mexican-born champion, right? And then they've said the same thing for Yair Rodriguez when he was interim champion. They've said those things, but for Alexa Grasso as well. But nobody ever said that's the first real Mexican champion, right? Because it's that. I think that's the thing, is that real aspect of it. Take race out of anything. You know what I mean? If you want to take race out of it, take race out of it. Although, again, your country did have a racist system set up until not that very long ago of segregation. So, you know, please understand
some
that.
Some say it's still there.
So, exactly. So, anyway, I don't know. I don't want to make the whole show about that.
You're right.
We don't like talking politics, but I just think to pretend that this stuff isn't there. It has shocked me how many, hateful messages I've gotten, which is weird. I'm like, you don't even know me, and I don't know why you're bothering to reach out to me to talk shit to me. What kind of person does that? But second of all, like, just the ignorance to pretend it's not there. You don't have to be saying either guy is wrong. You don't have to be saying either guy meant to. But you can still look at a situation and step back and go, hey, this maybe is, this is how it went wrong, and this is what we could have done instead.
Yeah. It is. I mean, it's such a hot, crazy topic that people are going to be upset about, you know. And like I said, I mean, it's hard to even talk about it, and because I feel like once your emotions start getting into it and you try to come up with an answer, nothing sounds right, because, you know, there's obviously various levels of both sides of people and people's upbringings. I mean, there were times, I remember when I think back and go back to listen to some of the shit, you know, my dad would say when I was younger, I was just like, dude, what the fuck? Nowadays, I'd have to be like, Dad, shut the fuck up. But it's like, it was a different generations, different times. And I just feel like there's a lot of people in America that have chosen to not try to care about other cultures and other stuff. And it just gets very frustrating. But I realize that's not just an America problem. That happens all over the place, you know. But I mean, the world has gotten too small for us to not understand and look at the differences and the greatness of different cultures and stuff. I mean, what used to be, you know, it would be almost impossible to get over to another continent or country without such a crazy laborious travel. Now that shit can be done in hours. Mm-hmm. And then let alone with the communications that now enable us to in near instant communicate with people across the world. So, I mean, for people to not take into account different cultures and beliefs and other stuff, and it just only be centric in our own thoughts. That's just not a world I want to live in, where, you know, where, you know, our beliefs are the only ones that matter. Because, I mean, you know, how do we ever grow and realize when we do stupid shit if you don't see somebody else doing something good? I mean, I love I feel the travel. I mean, like, I always, you know, going back and I don't even know why we keep fucking talking about it, but it's hard to not talk about it. I always thought that part of going to school, you know, when you graduate, part of, you know, they make you take, even in high school, you have to graduate, you have to take part of a foreign language.
Right.
Why do you think they do that? Why do they think you want to learn something out of your own so you can understand and have a breadth of knowledge about cultures elsewhere? And in college, I did a study abroad, and I wish that they would just make it mandatory where people have to do a study abroad to get a college degree. Because, I mean, especially if you're, the next step after that is to go to a, you know, is to either create a business or work in business and or work with a company that might interact with, you know, people outside of your own borders, that you should have some sort of understanding of what life is like somewhere else outside of just what life's like in your own state. You know, to think that there's some people that never leave their state, they never leave their hometown. How can they have a worldview that makes any sense when you don't see anything further than, you know, a 25-minute drive? It doesn't make any fucking sense.
It's, you know, actually pretty, the only thing they see is on
TV. But yeah, it's such a hard topic, and I'm sure I sound like an asshole because I feel like I can never verbulate or say the right words about this sort of stuff, because it is such a crazy hot topic. This is the stuff I usually, and that's why we don't usually talk politics, because I'd rather just have a couple of beers and be like, oh, let's fucking move on. What's on TV or something else, you know? It's just kind of crazy.
Yeah, it is funny. Speaking of that, it would have been easy to avoid, but I just felt it was.
It sucks that you have to go through it.
Yeah, I felt like
You know what? That doesn't happen on Threads. Maybe you should get off Twitter. No, that's like the joke. Everybody's like, is Threads where we're supposed to be nice to each other? But like, I wonder how long that's going to last. I'm like, it's not going to last long. Hate's going to go everywhere, you know. But yeah, if you want to get rid of that stuff, John, why don't you just
hop over to Threads? Like you said, we don't like to talk politics, but I felt like it would be disingenuous not to talk about it, considering what a big story it ended up being and how much I was right in the middle of it. So I did want to give my thoughts on it.
Boy, that's a fight I'm looking forward to.
I know, that's the funny
part. It's ridiculous.
We talked about all this tension. Ridiculous. I'm like, all right, cool. When's the fight? Can't wait to see it.
Oh, yeah, can they start punching each other in the face now? Can they just shut up and punch each other in the face?
We need to get to the other big headline, but I kind of think I know where you're going, because you talked about, you said you'd prefer to just have a frosty beverage and watch TV, and then you started to say something about TV, and I can read your mind, because I've been around you long enough. You were going to bring up Jung Young Park today and y'all's discussion of Korean television during the media day today. You guys.
Did you see him do the moves? The arm things? That's actually the character. When he did that, I was like, bro, he knows the show.
You guys had a moment. That was definitely Jung Young Park's favorite media day ever, dude. Like, he's going to come back, and I don't know what kind of hat his people wear, but he's going to take care of you, and he's going to hook you up, man, because he was – Jung Young Park obviously doesn't speak any English, but you were using the translator to get into some Korean television, and that was the happiest I've ever seen that man.
It's funny, and it's happened over a few interviews where he comes back, and we always eventually somehow get to how he's hungry. He loves In-N-Out, so I was like, okay, I got to work in the In-N-Out. And then I remember one time we talked about an anime, and he told me about this boxing one. So now it's just like something throwaway. I'm always like, dude, let me just see what he's watching or whatever. But the funny part is because you know the story that if anybody ever walked in my house and turned on my Netflix, they would think that Jung-Yong Park lived here because all it is like Korean rom-com and like weird anime and other kind of stuff. So it was kind of funny to have that moment to be able to actually throw the show up, which is actually a really, really fun show. It's called The Extraordinary Attorney Wu, which I think there might be some translation because it actually could even be called The Weird Attorney Wu or something like that. But yeah, so I brought that show up to try to talk to him about it. And yeah, he actually saw it. I was actually even went so far as to actually try to learn the Korean phrase to how to say it in Korean. But when I tried to pronounce it back to myself over and over, it wasn't matching up to how the Google Translate said it. So I just kind of gave up on that. But yeah, dude, it's so fun to be able to kind of just have those moments with some of the fighters and be able to, you know, hop in there and then, you know, find something to connect that's not just about fight stuff. It really, really makes all the difference.
Yeah, no, I definitely got a kick out of watching it cracking me up. It actually reminds, you know, God, here we go, just going down memory lane. I got to get to this Francis Ngannou situation. But somebody, I don't know who it was, somebody brought up that bar that we ended up in Seoul, South Korea, became like home base. Bar. I think it was literally just called Bar. Like, we were just walking around this cold-ass neighborhood. Yeah. There was, like, snow on the ground, I think, when we were there. If there wasn't snow, it was just really, really cold. And we just found a place that said Bar, and we went in, and it was, like, the coolest spot. And we ended up, you know, it ended up being kind of like the official thing. I remember, the last night, wasn't it, like, Yair Rodriguez was in there, and I can't remember who all the
everybody. Yeah, I can't remember. I remember we were putting like massive tables together, and it wasn't even the biggest spot. And I was like, we literally had like the whole
space. It was amazing. But I remember, and I remember you were talking to the bar owner. It was like a family, like a husband and wife, right, that owned the bar, and you were using
or something like that. Yeah,
you were using like Google Chat on your phone or whatever to
Google Translate. One of the first versions of Google Translate, and it's not as good as it was now. Then it was like a lot rustier. Now Google Translate's so fantastic. You could actually hold it and you could do like the live translation and all this other crazy shit. Back then it wasn't quite as good. It was a lot more cumbersome. It was more like, here, let me type. Let me show you. All right, now you
but
type.
It was cool though. Okay, it was still cool. Yeah. Y'all were like,
it worked.
Yeah.
It worked. It pops up as a Facebook memory every once in a while because I remember I put it on Facebook because I was like, dude, this is like one of the greatest things that ever happened. And that's part of like what I was saying about the travel and just going to these other places. If you go to a place and allow yourself to be less guarded and to just go with the moment and then in a sense, like just be embarrassed, like it be awkward. Like that was it was kind of embarrassing. Like, but it was like, I was earnest in that. I wanted to have a conversation knowing that half the stuff that it translated didn't make any sense, but it was enough that we felt like, okay, I think I get the gist of what you're saying. And then you would respond to that, which maybe either took it further down a rabbit hole in the wrong way, but it still worked. And the guy, I think we're Facebook friends. I don't think we've chatted since because he doesn't speak English. It was fantastic. I mean, like that was one of the coolest things. So yeah, I mean, I think about that one all the time because like, I don't even know if we'd be able to even find it. I think in my mind, I kind of remember how we sort of got to the neighborhood. But yeah, I would love to someday stumble back upon that bar. I think I would be as happy as can be.
I would too. Seoul is a really cool place. I didn't know what to expect out of Seoul, but I really liked Seoul a lot, man. It was a fun trip, man.
And it was cold as shit, and Morgan still walked around in his shorts. And I remember everybody was just like, who's this motherfucker with shorts? There was snow on the ground. You had your jacket.
Sorry.
And you were wearing shorts. And I was like, this is hilarious. They were like, he's not from here. He's not from around here.
They were like, just give him a beer and don't ask any questions. He's obviously crazy. Like, don't upset the crazy man. Just give him his beer. All right, listen, I did want to get your thoughts with Francis Ngannou and Tyson Fury now official on October 28th. We've been talking about the possibilities of it for a while, and I mean, I think everybody is pretty universally happy for Francis Ngannou. The man got exactly what he wanted. And not only just financially in terms of getting a big paycheck, but just getting a chance to fight an elite level boxer, which is, you know, I mean, we all know the story by now. He grew up watching Mike Tyson and dreaming of being an elite level boxer. And Fernand Lopez was like, hey, you know, I think I can get you to an elite level faster as a mixed martial artist. Why don't you try that? And he did. But boxing was all his passion. And so now it's done. And I'm super happy for him. I think we all are. I will say it's been a little weird to see all the talk of like, oh, who said Francis was fumbling the bag? Like, to be honest, I never saw anybody, I mean, maybe like just hot take experts or people that are just trying to stir the pot that said he stumbled, that he fumbled the bag. I mean, I think the thing always was, if he gets this boxing match signed, everything's perfect. If he doesn't, then yep. It may have been an issue. But what did we always say is like, hold on. Let things play out. Let's see how it all plays out, and hopefully it'll get done for the best. And it did get done for the best. So I don't know. I thought that was weird that it seemed like I didn't see as many people other than just, like, again, random social media people that were trying to be experts or whatever that said, like, he made a mistake. Like, he still had to negotiate a contract signed. So anyway, I thought that was weird that everybody seemed to be getting real defensive over it. But I will say, now that it's done, I'm going to stick to the guns that I said all along about here's my take on it and my thoughts on it, and I'll let you chime in. I have a feeling it's probably pretty similar. But bottom line is, I don't expect it to be a very competitive boxing match. That said, the power that Francis Ngannou does possess maybe does make it a little bit more intriguing because, you know, it's like – no disrespect to Conor McGregor, but I just never thought he was going to be able to knock out Floyd Mayweather. Francis Ngannou can knock out probably any human being on the planet. Now, he's got to land first, and that's a challenge against Tyson Fury. So I don't expect it to be super competitive, but I will say at least that power thing does make it interesting. If it was anything other than boxing, obviously if it was a mixed martial arts fight, I'm picking Francis Ngannou all day long. Even to me,
100%.
If it was a kickboxing match, if you just added in the fact that Francis Ngannou could throw low kicks, I would say he's going to win that too because Tyson Fury's not used to it. But it's boxing, so I'm picking Tyson Fury. So with all that said, I think our buddy Kevin Ioli, I think he kind of came out against it. I've seen some people kind of coming out against it. I will say I'm approaching
that's true to form for Kevin as well. Kevin came out, he was against the Mayweather and McGregor as well, but I think he enjoyed it. It's kind of weird because the same people that come out shitting on it tend to like these things after the fact, you know. But I guess it's par for the course for him. But
well, that's what I think.
It certainly didn't surprise me the hate came out about it.
It didn't surprise me, but I want to say I'm approaching it the same way I did. And actually, let me find this tweet because it was from Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. He said,
I mean, do we really know even like the fine details? I know they said there's going to be boxing rules. Does that mean it's a boxing fight with record, or do we even know that, or is it an exhibition?
I don't think we know if it's an exhibition yet. We know the title is not on the
line. We just know it's boxing rules.
Right. We know the title's not on the line, which I think is probably just because they don't want to use the sanctioning bodies, because the sanctioning bodies get a fee, and they're probably like, well, we don't want to pay a fee for this, so we're not going to do it. But my take on this is I don't think it's going to be very competitive. That said, I'm absolutely interested in watching it. I absolutely will watch it. I will watch it in the exact same way that I watched Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor, which is, this is wild, this is crazy, this doesn't happen very often. Look at these two cultural icons coming together for this sporting event. I will look at it as like we're attending a party, or we're watching a party, or it's you know, it's just, wow, isn't this crazy? This is fun. But do I expect? Am I watching it to say like, man, this is boxing at its finest. This is the highest level. No, but I think as long as you approach it with that understanding, I think you can still appreciate it for what it is.
Yeah, and I mean, and you're getting to see somebody fulfill a childhood dream, a lifelong dream. You know, it's, you know, one thing I see different in this too, like Conor never wanted to be a boxer. I mean, like, I think Conor understood that there was money to be made going into another combat sport with the biggest guy at the time. I mean, the difference with this, I mean, Francis wanted to be a boxer.
Right.
And it's not like Francis didn't ever do boxing before he did MMA. I mean, like, the guy was training in it. I mean, did he leave that to go and focus on other things? He sure did. But like you said, there's power. But this is a guy that's wanted to do this his whole entire life and finally had the opportunity to do it against the biggest guy in the sport. How can you not be happy for, you know, of course I'm happy for the numbers. And I'm sure the pay is going to be astronomical. And this is what he wanted to do. But also, I mean, this is a man that, you know, comes from humble beginnings and now is actually, besides what he's been able to do already, that you could say that he's fulfilled a lifelong dream. He's made his dreams come true. This is a legit the biggest dream that he ever really strived for. And I think the dream when he got into athletics, this is what he wanted to do. And so yes, he could have just took a boxing fight, of course, but he built up equity in his name and in his brand. So, you know, he wanted a big name, and for him to land the biggest fish out there is just absolutely it's just amazing. And it didn't even need to have the belt because he's getting the money and he's getting the name. And even if it's not even the most competitive, which it could be, but honestly, he's not going to go out there like Conor McGregor. He's not going to go out there, I don't think, try to end it in the first thing. I think he's smart enough to realize they can look at the mistakes that the other MMA guys are making in trying to push too fast and maybe not keeping a proper defense. You know, maybe there is going to be something in this, and Tyson's going to want to try to push on him to see if he has any sort of boxing defense. I mean, we know Tyson Fury's got mad power, but I think he's smart enough to try to rush in. So I think he might give Francis the time to kind of get his bearings in there. I think the difference will be, you know, should it get, if he's taking lots of hits in defense and other stuff, and as the fight gets long, whether his defenses start to wane because he's tired, he can't keep his arms up, and other sort of stuff. In mixed martial arts and other stuff, he's able to kind of clinch, he's able to grab, he's able to sort of put his weight and tire the other fighter's arms down. It's just going to be a matter of how sloppy he gets as the fight goes on. Mm-hmm. But I think he's smart enough to understand that this is a different sport than MMA, because this is the sport he wanted to do. I think he's going to go in it with a lot more respect. I think he's going to go into the training doing the right things he's able to do. He's able to afford to have the best trainers and coaches around him that, you know, are actual boxing coaches and tacticians and the best trainers that he could put himself through. And when you look at Francis, he's an absolute specimen. He's so strong, he's so fit, and everything we've seen from him, he doesn't tire out like he used to. And again, I mean, he's going to be able to keep those legs around him. He's not going to be pushed as much. So, I mean, he's going to be able to keep that base behind him. That power is going to carry further because he's not throwing so much other stuff. He's not using power to do lots of crazy clinches and takedowns and other sort of stuff. So, you know, am I going to go out there and say like, oh, you know, hey, watch out, world. I do have the hopes that this is going to go a lot better than recent examples that we've seen of MMA guys going into it, because I believe this is something he's thought about over and over and over, and I'm sure he's not going to blow the moment by just trying to rush across the cage and try to knock out, you know, Fury in the first round or two. I think he's smart enough to understand that this fight, how many rounds did they say it was?
Ten
rounds? I think he's smart enough to understand that, you know, the real fight happens halfway through. You know, the first five rounds, I think things are they're going to be feeling each other out, and Tyson's going to be testing to see how well his defense is, you know. And you know, just like when we saw Floyd and McGregor, Mayweather just shelled up for the first three rounds and let McGregor just wear himself out around roughly two or three rounds.
Yep, about three rounds.
I can't remember the full gist of it. But I think we're going to get a better showing than we can. But also, Fury can take a punch. You know, we've seen other fighters take Ngannou's power, and we're talking about the best boxer in the world. So if people think that, you know, Francis is going to go out and take him out with one strike, it's not going to happen, even with the best punch.
Go watch Deontay Wilder.
It's not enough.
Watch Deontay Wilder.
So, I mean, I'm leaning definitely towards Fury, but I'm so happy for Francis, and I give him a better chance probably than most. I'm not going to say that he's going to win, but I think I would be willing to say it's going to be a heck of a lot better than what most people think, because I think he's approaching it differently than other ones. And Francis is Francis. I mean, like, at this point, how can you doubt the dude? Look at him.
That's it.
He manifested this. He made this happen, you know? So, who's to say what that belief and that power can't do for him? I mean, you can't doubt the dude.
No, I expect Tyson Fury, you know, 99 times out of 100, if I'm being honest. But I think this is one where maybe, you know, we haven't heard the price point yet, but maybe if it ends up being, I'm sure it's going to be 80, 90, 100 bucks. I think
100
maybe
bucks probably.
Yeah, probably 100.
I just saw 109 109 flashed in my head real quick for something, which is such a ridiculous number.
109.
But I don't know why.
But you know what,
if that comes, I'm going to play the lottery.
I think this is one where maybe, you know, if you've got some buddies or whatever, like see if everybody can come over and chip in and see if you can. Like I said, it's just going to be fun. I think if you come at it from that perspective, like this is just going to be a fun night. It's not something we see a lot of. Enjoy the moment. You know, you're not necessarily going to see the most competitive fight or the greatest upset you've ever expected to see in our history being made. But it's kind of wild, man. So I think it's cool. So speaking of Conor McGregor, we do have to do the brief weekly check-in on The Ultimate Fighter. Did you see this latest week's episode where Jason Knight, who you were a little worried about, you thought this was going to be
I was a little worried, and boy,
is.
I look like I fumbled the bag on that one. If anybody's fumbling the bag, you know, if I thought there was a guy that maybe wasn't going to do it, I thought it was Jason, and he had pretty much the quickest finish, or
quickest
one of the
finish
quickest
of the season,
you know?
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Man, how can you not be happy for that dude? I'm starting to feel bad for the prospects, man. Like, it didn't really work out well. I mean, like,
0-7.
They ran into guys that have been there and that are just hungry to get back to it. And it's not like these guys didn't come in hungry. I think it's just the experience level, the experience difference of what the vets have been through, fighting the toughest at the game, and then to get back in there and fight these guys that they maybe don't see on their level. It's not like they trained lighter because they thought these guys were prospect. They trained just like they were going to be going in there fighting a vet, and it just turned to be more than what these guys wanted. I mean, guy had a great fight. I mean, he had a plan. Like, he didn't like the, and like Jason said, he didn't like how Jason was power, and he took him down. But just Jason, that transition into that triangle was just slick, man. It
Beautiful.
Was just nasty.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, and it was like perfect. And you go and you hear Chandler talking about it. He's like, dude, I think that was like one of the best ones I've ever seen. You know, he's a champion level fighter, you know, so that's how slick it was for Jason. But yeah, man, now I'm like, dude, can they go 8-0? And
it's crazy.
Unreal, because they were talking about it, you know, like, what do you do? Do you just say, hey, Conor, thanks for coming in for the show this week? We're just going to now, hand over here. I know they're going to end up giving him some of the fighters. They have to. If they go 8-0, I guarantee they're going to take some of those fighters and make them Team Conor.
They will.
So that it can be a Conor Chandler.
I mean, look, they'll give him Katona right away, right? I mean, that's an automatic. Like, that's going to happen. So then you figure out what to do. But it was interesting. So, first of all, I just want to say the editing and the, I guess, just the wherewithal to catch it. Maybe I guess the audio recording of it as well, but the moment that submission gets done and Conor just kind of like lets out this like groan / sigh where it's like, oh, and they've got the audio perfect and they made sure and used that little clip. I thought that was amazing because it showed his real frustration. And, you know, as you said, he immediately goes and asks, hey, what if it's a clean sweep? What do we do? And I saw some people saying like, oh, well, what has he already given up on his last guy? Has he already given up on his team? I don't think that's the case. I just think, honestly, that was like – panic might not be the right word, but maybe a little bit. You know what I mean? It's like, oh my, like reality setting in. Like, what happens if we lose everyone?
Was Knight a one pick?
Yes.
Because I think the next pick for Chandler is his other number
it's
one.
His other
pick.
Number one. Yep.
So that's, I mean, Conor's got to be like, well, fuck. Now we're getting his. It's his fours against, you know, Chandler's ones. You know, I mean, I'm sure he at some point was like, man, this is going to be rough. And it's funny because whenever they show the previews for the next week, I'm always like, oh, are they teasing me? They're showing this guy getting the better, and then I know they're going to, like, the episode's going to happen, and it's like, oh, you know, they got their ass whipped. That was just the one good fight, the one good hit or something. But then seeing the reaction of Conor after that, I'm like, dude, that clip makes me think they do go 8-0 for sure. I mean, like, when you saw the fight stuff and then you see sort of the Conor meet the after, I'm like, dude, do they go 8-0? Like, this is crazy. But I mean, they had a tough, I mean, I feel bad for the prospects in the sense, I think if it would have been all prospects, a lot of those guys would be moving on, would be going further, but they had a tough battle in front of them. All those guys, to be, you know, those are the kind of guys that they would fight should they get into the UFC. But these weren't just UFC hacks. These were like legit UFC guys that had good runs in the UFC. It wasn't the guys that made a debut and never got a win and were just like, oh, hey, well, thanks for coming. And then they go in and they say, yeah, you were in the UFC, bro, but you sucked. Like, all these guys in the UFC that are here on this show were good fighters at some point, had some good fights in the UFC. So I kind of feel bad for it because I feel like the cards were sort of stacked against them. I feel like if it would have been all prospects, some of them would actually be getting the chance to their chance at getting that contract at the end. But I think anything along the line, just like how we see with the contender series, some of these fighters that are on the prospect level, especially ones that are connected to Conor, are going to get contracts. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not going to be right at the end of the show, but then some of them are going to get asked to come back on to fight in the finale, and some are going to be able to go on. They're still getting that exposure. We're seeing the guys that have good fights. They're just running into tough guys. But yeah, man, I mean, I like the show. I think the editing's made it certainly seem that both coaches are very involved. In fact, in this one, we actually saw that Conor actually suited up and actually was getting in there and sparring with the guys. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yep.
I didn't think he looked that great in the clips that they showed. He definitely looked like he just looked not slow, because Conor would look like a speeding bullet should I get on the opposite side of him. But it just looked like he was a bit slow. But I did like what he was saying, though. He was like, about being around all the young guys going. It was getting those juices going. Like he said, that's what I need. You know, I kind of need that thing, which I guess can fuel on the other side. People say that, you know, he doesn't really plan on fighting again. He just did the show for money and whatever, and just to keep them toying along a little bit. But
just for the product
placement. And yeah, and for the product placement, yeah.
It's been great.
But I did enjoy hearing that. I did hear enjoying that because and maybe you think like, hey, maybe there is a possibility of him actually getting back in there. I mean, say what you want about the guy. I mean, he's given us a lot of really great moments in the cage.
Oh, and absolutely.
I would like to see if I could see another one of those.
Yep.
I mean, I would like to see, even the last fights that didn't end, even the fights that, you know, that ended in injury and stuff, there were still moments of just anticipation that are just very unique to a Conor fight that Conor's able to bring it. And I miss those sort of things, you know. Granted, I don't do a lot of social media, so like seeing him on his yachts, that's cool or whatever. But I live for those moments where I get to see him go in there and put on these epic performances that maybe someday could be in like the Hall of Fame.
Absolutely.
You know, I still feel like he's got that capability. But as time goes on, and if he does lose that spark, you know, the potential of that never happen again becomes more and more real. So it was just refreshing to see that spark kind of light up again for him. Because it gave me hope that maybe we will see him in there again.
Absolutely.
So fingers crossed.
I absolutely do hope we see him again. And I think we will. I'm still cautiously optimistic that we will see him.
Yeah.
All right. I'm not going to give a full breakdown of UFC on ESPN 49. Obviously, you know, not necessarily the most loaded card. This is what happens after a loaded pay-per-view. You come back, you have a card that's a card full of some fights. I do think there's going to be some intriguing matchups on it. And looking on the prelims, it's crazy to see Ashley Evans-Smith back in there. It's been a long time since she's been in there, so good to see her on the comeback. I was bummed today, especially, that I wasn't there for media day when I found out Basil Chavez was going to be there when he stepped in against Jack Della Maddalena.
It's pronounced Basil.
Well,
no, I'm just kidding.
He came through the CFFC.
We had actually asked him about that one.
Yeah, he came through the CFFC, and he was the champ at one. He had a really, really good fight. He claimed the belt with a submission win over Christian Savoie, and then lost it with a split decision loss to Evan Cutts, which was a phenomenal, phenomenal fight way back at CFFC 94. Then he since got a couple of wins, including a win over Cutts, and gets this UFC call. He did actually have a split draw with Jeremiah Wells under the CFFC banner a few years back, and now obviously Jeremiah Wells in the UFC as well. So anyway, I was excited to see Basil step in.
Just pumping out the CFFC facts.
Hey,
man.
That's
look
my
at
family
that.
Right there.
Not sounding like a homer or nothing, man.
Oh, I'm a homer. That's my family. When they come in, like, but to be honest with you, I really mean it. Like, it's so cool. Like, I like being there, especially for their media day. Just if for nothing else, and just to give them a familiar face to look at and talk to, you know what I mean? Like, so, like, I know they're, like, kind of, fired up, and this is new and crazy, and I'm like, hey, I know that guy. Like, that guy called my fights or whatever. Like, ah, let's talk, yeah. You know? So I was bummed that I didn't get to do it. Obviously, he's got a huge uphill battle against Jack Della Maddalena, who's got a lot of hype around him, and deservedly so. So I was bummed I was not there for that. I would say, too, bummed to hear about Walt Harris as well, man. Gosh, you know, Walt Harris, I talked to him a few weeks back, so I did get some time with him before this fight, and I know how excited he was to be back and how he really feels like after the time away, he's kind of been able to process all the grief and the emotions that he dealt with. And he admitted to me, he was like, I came back too fast. And we talked about it. I didn't want to get too heavy because I didn't want to bring him down too much. But I did ask him, you know, after the loss that you suffered, was there a part of you that maybe just wanted to fight because, like, that was a sense of your normalcy and you kind of needed that to keep going? But in retrospect, it probably wasn't the right decision. He was like, yeah, that's it, 100%. Like, I thought I needed to fight just because, like, that's what I do and let me take my mind off, you know, all this that I'm dealing with. When in reality, what you need to do is to meet that stuff head on, you know, take time away from competing and just really process your emotion and your grief and your loss. And he felt like he had gotten to that point. And then he finds out this week, right before the comeback, that he has a USADA issue. He posted that he thinks it's due to a supplement that he's taken forever, but that he admitted that he didn't get checked. And I just want to send these reminders, man. If you're a fighter, if you know somebody that's a fighter, if you're involved with somebody that's a fighter, there's a couple things you got to do. Number one, check every single thing that you take, every single thing they put in your body as far as supplements go. They do have an approved list, man. I know it's a pain in the ass, but they do have a documented list of, like, these are approved supplements, and you know, these have all been independently tested and verified, so take these. And then the other thing that's a big one that I guarantee you probably hardly anybody does this, but it's a really, really wise one. I've heard Jeff Nowitzki talk about it, and I've heard other people talk about it, is out of every supplement you take, don't take the full bottle. Like, leave a little bit of it, whether it be save a pill, it, yeah, powder, whatever. Just take – yeah, and listen, you don't have to save it forever, but maybe, like, a year's worth, 6 months' worth at the very minimum. Just throw that little bit into a box and store that box somewhere. The reason being that if for some reason you do get what you think is a contaminated supplement causing a positive test – but you don't have any of that batch left, because say maybe, you know, you're taking a whatever it may be, and you finish one bottle and you move on to the next one, it was actually manufactured in a different batch. When USADA or Nevada, when they go to test this batch of supplements, they're testing your current one, when in reality the one that made you positive was in this other batch, and they don't have any of it to test. So that's an extra step that I'm sure most people don't do, but it's a very, very important one. And again, I know that may sound like a lot, but when this is your primary source of income and it is your career, I just think you have to take those precautions, right? I mean, I think about all the precautions you take with your backup of your video stuff and the way you treat your equipment and all that. Like, it may be a little excessive to some, but that's your livelihood, right? So you take extra steps that the average person probably wouldn't to ensure that you can do everything and operate fine and make your money.
Yeah, and just gutted, especially this, you know, and they've even said in the past, and especially if he's saying that this is something he's taken forever, I mean, we've seen fighters in the past just send their supplements. They send some of the supplements to the UFC or USADA. They probably just send them to UFC because I'm sure they're not reaching out to USADA. I'm like, hey, let me send it to you, because they could send it to the UFC, and the UFC are like, hey, USADA, test this. I mean, I've heard of them sending their supplements, you know, where it's like, okay, you don't want to check a list or whatever. Send me what you're taking. We'll test it, and then you know for sure. But even then, like you said, it's not a bad idea to keep a hold of that bottle, or, you know, keep a dose in there or something, you know, to save just in case, even if they change their mind. Because, yeah, I mean, if it says that something that's been taken for a long time, you're wondering why it didn't hit ping something in the past. So maybe there is manufacturing differences or whatever. But still, for a guy that, you know, I don't – knowing what he's gone through, you know, you just want this guy to have a good life. You want him to be able to kind of, you know, he's had about the harshest shit that you can think happen. Like has he done, depending on how religious you are or something, you know, I could see where somebody's like, hasn't God tested him enough, you know?
Yeah.
But man, I feel gutted for the dude, because the guy is a nice guy. I would never think that, you know, and again, maybe this is because we feel close and kind of feel, you know, it's hard to separate the differences sometimes when you respect somebody and you really like somebody. I've never seen anything from him to make me think that he's a cheater and that he would want it to do something to do that sort of thing.
I agree.
But yeah, man, I'm just gutted for him, because I did pick him to win this fight. I think this was a very winnable fight, and he's always gives us good answers. But again, man, yeah, I mean, you realize the difference is when these fighters, when something happens and they're not able to fight, you know, how hard that is. I know if I wasn't able to work, I'd be devastated. You know, I don't have a stockpile of money saved up to where I can just live without doing my job. And I'm not sure how it is for Walt, but I know most of these fighters need these fights. And now with there being the potential that, you know, depending on the outcome of what's happening, you know, there might be other fights that he misses. You know, I just want a quick resolution, and I hope there's, you know, there's not some sort of, I hope there's just like a quick, easy, good resolution and not, you know, something that's going to punish the guy for a long time.
Yeah, hopefully they can find out one of these, you know, a way to get this one down to 6 months or something like that. You know what I mean? To find out that, yeah, it was a supplement because he helped and because, you know. Hopefully they find a way to get it, because I agree, man. The man has gone through enough. Not that that would give him license to cheat if he is cheating, but I agree with you. I don't think that he would be. Nothing has indicated to me that he's that kind of guy. But, yeah, we shall see. Felt bad for him. All right. Main event, Holly Holm, Mayra Buena Silva. I mean, listen, it's number 3 versus number 10 at 135. There are real title implications. There's a lot of discussion of maybe.
That's why this makes sense.
Yeah.
When we're talking about this card with Nunes leaving, this fight makes a lot of importance for the division.
Yes.
So, if somebody was like, "Why is this the main event?" One, it's Holly Holm for Pete's sake.
Yep.
But this legit makes this is a huge fight when it comes into terms of who could be fighting for the title next.
100%. I completely agree, and it does. You know, it's funny. So. Kind of leads this. All right, so a lot of people are saying Juliana Pena versus Raquel Pennington.
Did you watch the interview?
I saw Mayra Buena Silva tried to get you in trouble. She was like, tell me honestly, do you want to see this fight? And you were like,
regardless of how I feel, you think I'm ever going to say anything that gives Pena more fuel to kick junkies' butt? I'm like, no, thank you. Yes, I want to see that fight. I do want to see that fight. You know,
It's the most logical fight.
It is. And I mean, like, Pennington's been grinding for it. I mean, Juliana's calling for it. Juliana's into it. So it's like, but what was weird is that when the cameras were done in the room and other stuff, there were certainly other people that were like, I don't want to see that fight. I'm like, man, am I odd man out? I was like, I wasn't lying. I was like, I'd be interested in seeing that fight. But I also like Rocky a lot. I think Rocky's a great fighter. I think Juliana's a great fighter. I mean, granted, she tends to be off-putting to some people sometimes with the way that she does stuff, and I don't agree with the way that she was sort of bitching after Amanda left and retired. But that all being said, she's a hell of a fighter, and Rocky's a hell of a fighter. So yeah, I'm down for that fight. But I was certainly in the rarity in the press room, and I was a little bit surprised that it was so heavily that others were just like, yeah, I don't want to see that fight. Well, and I was like, okay, maybe I'm the weird one.
Then I would chat, you know, and I get it. I do understand it, right? They've had some setbacks. They've had some losses, whatever the case may be. But you still have to crown a new champion at some point, right? And I'm not saying you have to do it right away. Now, okay, look, if we wanted to just get buck wild and say, you know what I would like to see? I would like to see him put an 8-woman tournament together with the winner claiming the belt. That would be cool, but guess what? It ain't happening. So get that out of your possibility. It's not happening. So if you've got to make a fight for the title, I mean, And I don't mean this as any disrespect to anybody else on that list, but this is just what happens when you have a dominant champion for as long as Amanda Nunes was. There's no two people on that list that you go, oh, that's the fight to make because that – no, they've all had losses because they've all gotten set back by the champion. So at that point, you go to number one versus number two, and that's Pena versus Pennington.
And how cool is that to actually have a one against two? We see so many. It's like one against, you know, the upcoming six that talks shit, or one against number four, or two against seven, or whatever. I mean, like, just to get back and actually have one against two, that's what a lot of people have been fighting for years, saying that, you know, the rankings were supposed to mean more, something like, how can you have somebody outside of one and two fighting for the championship? Now we have it. You know, sure, could their fighting styles, you know, maybe they're not the most exciting at times, but they get the job done, and you know what you're going to get. Like, if you think that either one of those two are going to go out there and just, like, walk around and not try to throw punches, like when we saw Natan Schulte and that is not going to be this fight. You know, like, both of these ladies are going to go in there and give their all, and at points of that, their skills might offset each other, and maybe it's not the crazy most exciting, but I know that both of them are going to go out and give me 110%, and that's enough for me as a fight fan. that I appreciate that stuff. But also, I mean, I was a guy that homered for Invicta, and some Invicta fights weren't the greatest, but I love the effort. Any athlete wants to go out there and put 100% and willing to put their life and body on the line to entertain. I mean, you got to give them respect. So I feel like people that just shit on fights like this for no reason is just kind of a slight to the athletes. But I think this is a fantastic fight.
I agree. And then
I think it's great.
And then you can get interesting with it, because then look, they were on the Ultimate Fighter together. They both were on Team Tate. So maybe you could even have.
There's going to be heat. Yeah, legit heat. There
really is. So there's other ways around it. So anyway, I think that's the fight to make. But this number 3 versus number 10 does have some pretty interesting implications as well. So this is a big fight. I will say, Chelsea Chandler brought it up that she heard Ronda Rousey is coming back at 145.
Yeah. Have you heard anything like that?
No. Look.
I didn't either. I'm like, where is this coming from? This is crazy.
I've heard some people suggest that maybe it's possible. I do know that her WWE contract is ending like within the next couple of months or what have you. And I guess maybe coming back at 45 would make sense, just because, you know, it has been several years, and I know that, you know, I wouldn't say the weight cut was hard for her, but, you know, that's not her walk around weight by any stretch of the imagination. She does have a pretty significant cut.
If they're looking for a savior of the 45, if Ronda came back and said, Dana, I'm coming back, that 45 division is not going anywhere.
100%.
And that's crazy. I mean, like, they would just dub her as the savior of the 45 division now and just give it another title for it.
And listen, I mean, look, you need a headliner in December. I mean, look, I know they're saying maybe there's still a possibility for Conor and Chandler in December. I just don't believe there is. I don't believe that USADA is going to issue any exemption. I just think they realize the implications of that. It's not going to happen. You do need – well, hell, at that point, Ronda would need
I read that as
months.
Conor entering the pool in December. When he put the December in, it was like, oh, he's going to fight in December. I was like, bro, that's when he's coming back to the pool.
Yeah.
He's not trying to fight anytime soon.
Well, wouldn't Ronda was under USADA too, right? So wouldn't she'd have to be
she
6
still
months
has to.
Too.
She still
so
has
she'd
to be
have
6
to be
months
tested
well.
For 6 months as well. So yep. Never mind. I was going to say.
Well, but I guarantee a lot more people would be people know Conor was taking shit to help with an injury. There's no excuse why nobody's thinking Ronda's out there doing something illicit. I think if there was ever a person that most people wouldn't care about an exception coming back, it would be Ronda. I think there's a difference in that, in the sense that when one athlete, we know that substances were being taken for the recovery. I can see where USADA says, well, if we're doing this one and this one, you know, it has to be 6 months. I would think with enough push, knowing that this athlete has legit been retired from the sport and is coming back, and I can see where they would maybe give her an exemption just for the fact that there's no reason to think that she had taking anything, where they know for a fact Conor's been taking shit, you know?
Right.
So I could see where they stick to the guns, but I wouldn't be surprised if they gave Ronda an exemption.
That's interesting.
And I just don't know if people would care. Would you care if they gave her an exemption?
Boy, I tell you what, it'd be an interesting slippery slope, right? Because, I mean, you laid out why it makes sense, but that would be awfully hard for people to argue that, like, you know, wait, how come he can and how come she can't? And I know you just made the argument, but I could see a lot of people going, no, no, no. If it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. You know what I'm saying? It's got to be both of them over there. So, interesting. But let me say this. From a financial standpoint, from a UFC standpoint, from a hype standpoint, a Ronda Rousey return does make sense. I will say, it seems like the women that have been asked about this have all been like, uh-uh. She doesn't get to go away for this many years and come back and just step in. Like, I know that they all have reverence for her and what she helped do for the women, but I haven't seen many women that have been like, oh, yeah, let her come back into a title shot. They haven't seemed real happy about it. But more so than any of that, we saw what Ronda was like at the end. She didn't want to be around all this. She didn't want to do all this stuff anymore. And everything I've ever heard is that financially, like, she is fine. She doesn't need any of it. So she wouldn't be coming back even for the money. So she'd have to be coming back because she wanted to do it. And I just don't see it. I just don't see it.
I just wonder. I mean, I wonder if the time away, and I think, you know, if there was ever something that kicked off those juices again, dealing with the WWE and some of the stuff that she had to go through, I wouldn't be surprised if she, not that it made her miss this sort of thing, but I think some of the stuff that I guarantee her time over the WWE hasn't been all roses and, you know, perfect things as well. She was dealing, getting heckled from the crowd, getting all kinds of other stuff. The worst case in this one is that it's just a real fight that she's going into. But when you look at the stuff and some of the WWE stuff, the physicality of that sport is just crazy. I mean, she's getting, you know, they're getting thrown on. There's real damage that's happening to these athletes. It just happens to be kind of scripted, yo.
Yep.
This is not scripted, but it's real damage that's going to happen in these fights. But I think there is something to it that maybe it did spark a little something. But also, too, the amount of money that the UFC would throw around to have another major star come back, even if it's for a short time. I mean, I think they were doing that even with Jones. I mean, they realized Jones' star power, and I'm sure they're throwing money around knowing that the very possibility that he could win the title and walk away. There's no guarantee that he's going to stick around for a while, too. So, I mean, I think they're getting used to this idea that, hey, we understand that if we can bring some of these big names back for some big money, that it works itself out, you know? So, I don't know. I'm not willing to – I mean – I just thought it was so surprising that just all of a sudden it kind of came out of nowhere. But I mean, man,
like it was just a known fact. Like it was just known.
Like it was just a known fight. I know. We want to be like, who's your sources? Like, you know, but yeah, two belts on the line. You know, the lioness is gone. The champ killer is gone. And there's money to be made. And the unique thing about it is, you know, I don't know if it was Chandler that said it or who else said it, you know, like they're not afraid of Ronda anymore. They do have reverence right. for what she was able to do, but I think, you know, I forget who called her the one-trick pony. Somebody sort of said that in a phrase today. The game has evolved a lot since then. Women's MMA has evolved a lot. The women, while they do revere her, it's like any of these guys, like Nico going out against Robbie Lawler, you know, knowing that this was going to be a retirement fight. The guy just got in the Hall of Fame. But they understand that, you know, like these people are human people. They're not the same, but they got to go in at the end of the day and get that paycheck. And I think it's the same thing with Ronda. Some of these athletes probably got inspired to get in the sport because of Ronda. But is that going to stop them from wanting to go in there and punch her in her face? And I guarantee all of them drilled arm bars from day one because of what Ronda was able to do.
Yep.
You know, remember when Gracie came back and fought, and that was just a massive nightmare. And it was just, you felt so bad for him. You know, it was just like, bruh, you should have stayed away, Hoyce. You should have stayed away, because all of a sudden they're watching their hero just get demolished. And he's like, oh, that's not quite as fun. There's that possibility that could happen. But I'm not, you know, I don't know. Maybe those are just all rumors, and maybe, you know, she's going to hear people saying that she's coming back and laughing. Like, I'm not sure where these people are talking about, but I think with her being able to doing this WWE stuff and dealing with some of the other stuff, the idea of getting these big paychecks, whether it's from one fight or two fights, she could come back and literally probably collect some paychecks just doing promotional stuff, saying that she's going to come back and just say she's going to fight just for one fight. You know, who knows what she can get out of it. But, you know, now I'm kind of in for it. I'm into it. You know, do I think she's going to, you know, ever be what she was before? No, because I think the game's caught up to where she was and surpassed where she was at, mm-hmm. you know. But that doesn't mean I don't want to see Ronda in it, because I remember when Ronda in her heyday was a lot of fun to be around. I mean, like, before there was Connor, there was Ronda.
Yep.
You know, so I'm in for it. I mean, I remember shooting a lot of really cool stuff with her, like at the Shark Tank, at the Mandalay Bay, and all kinds of, like, at the Stratosphere. People forget, like, you know, they were the first person that really had to jump through hoops and carried the brand, you know, when, I mean, not the first, but one of the first people that made it worldwide phenomenal was Ronda Rousey, you know.
Absolutely.
So if she wanted to come back, she's earned that right.
Back. And she absolutely can.
I'm not saying that she should come back and be awarded the title and just say, hey, you don't have to fight for this. We're just going to give you this vacant title. That would be kind of shitty. But
we gave it to you once, we're giving it to you again. How about that?
We gave it to you a second time. We did it once. I mean, we kind of set a precedent with you.
And the only reason we're doing this because
it's vacant. You know, like, hey, guys, we were going to get rid of this division, but instead, how about we're going to give Ronda the vacant and you guys can fight her for it?
Oh, that would be hilarious. People would go crazy.
But what if she agreed to it? One-shot deal. Like, I will come defend the belt. I want points. I want pay-per-view points. I want champ points. I want my championship pay, whatever. and no guarantee that I come back after this.
For the record, I do not think it happens, but if it does happen, I will be there to watch it because I'm with you, man.
Hell Jeez. Yeah.
I would be there for it. All right, listen, I got to pack up. I got to take the young man to jiu-jitsu, and then I'm going to head to the airport tonight. I am flying out to Tunica, Mississippi for CFFC 121 on Friday night. So make sure you tune in on UFC Fight Pass if you can. We got a great main event between Jose Perez and Chris Vassell. The former champ Raheem Forrest is in the building as well. It's a great lineup top to bottom. We'll tell you all about it on the broadcast. Andre Petrosky will be with me. My man CM Punk is tied up this weekend. So Andre Petrosky is going to be on commentary with me. And then I fly back in time. That I land from the airport, and provided I have not poisoned myself again, I will make my way to the UFC Apex for the fight. So I'll make it in time.
I'm not sure you're going to have many leftovers in fridges wherever you're going.
No. Hopefully nothing like that will happen. So I'm proud of myself that I made it through this. I was a little bit worried, but maybe we're getting a little better. So I'm
you did fine.
I'm a little worried about the drive to jiu-jitsu tonight, but hopefully we'll be okay. So we'll just
stop at the store and pick up some Depends. Put on one of them adult diapers or something.
Pull over and puke on the side of the road or something. So all right, listen. Appreciate everybody. Hope everybody enjoyed it. I appreciate you doing this remotely with me, Cold Coffee. Of course, if you want to take your support of the show to the next level, we always do have patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow, and we very much appreciate everybody that supports us over there. Matt Clark, I have not forgotten about you, but I got so damn sick I didn't get to put anything together on your question. So we will get to that next week, and next week we'll have a lot of time because the UFC is off in merry old England. And you and I are not making that trip, so you and I will be hanging out here in Las Vegas. And then,
Frosty beverages. That sounds like day drinking.
Maybe we'll have to – oh, now I'm going to have to – no, maybe we have to do a remote one on that one, too, because I think I'll be in Florida. I think I'll already be in Florida for CFSC. I know. Back-to-back CFSC, babies. We got lots of stuff coming. We'll figure it out, though. We'll get it done. I kind of like doing this remote. Again, maybe we end up shifting the video one of these days. I kind of like doing it like this, even though it means that we're not having frosty beverages together. But anyway, everybody has a great weekend. I'll be there. I'll be back in Vegas on Saturday. We'll have the NAF episode and all that. In the meantime, everybody, enjoy yourself, and thanks for listening.